Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of truth. We're very glad you could join us today. We're recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we welcome you all today. We will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading today from Addenda to Collectania, page 8, and then from pages 11 to 12, just excerpts from those pages. Pray God to help you awake to the claims of error and awake to the truth that destroys them. Whenever error would try to make sin, sickness, disease, or death seem real, God overrules it and makes them more unreal to us. Good reverses every evil argument and effort and brings out the opposite good. Declare continually your own perfection and freedom, and let the true and divine idea destroy the mesmerism that argues that you are sad and unhappy. This idea is your savior. Do not feel too much God's dear methods of unfoldment as a rod, but make them a staff. When others hate, oppose, ignore, help me, dear Lord, to love them more. Love unselfed, love of one's enemies, humility, moderation, strength are the cardinals of Christian Science. The divine law of life, truth, and love is a law of instant and constant, complete expulsion and elimination of all poisons and impurities from the system. Why? Because the flood tides of life divine, truth, and love are pouring and surging through consciousness, uplifting, purifying, nourishing, healing, elevating, sustaining, and energizing mankind. Everything that comes to me today brings me a blessing. There is no mortal mind to see me today or know me today or think it can, through any so-called laws of malpractice, rob me of all good or hinder me from being conscious here and now of my birthright, which is dominion. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watching point 292. Watch that you send forth your scientific arrows of thought with power, and then protect them against reversal. The entire volume of electricity present in the atmosphere is back of each lightning bolt. In like manner, we should realize that the entire power of God is back of every affirmation of truth that we make. When you read the arguments Mrs. Eddy used or gave to students to use, you can feel that she sent them out with such power that they reached the mark and destroyed the error in spite of error's attempt to reverse and nullify them. Once she declared, quote, "Since malicious animal magnetism knows all the arguments of Christian Science, it is necessary to declare that no argument of mental malpractice can make null and void, antidote or reverse, any statement of Christian Science that you make," end quote. Nature puts a hard shell of protection on the coconut. In like manner, we should guard our declarations of truth in order that they may accomplish that whereunto they are sent.
Thank you. All right, comments on that?
Oh, First of all, I thought that statement, the entire volume of electricity present in the atmosphere is back of each lightning bolt. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's
right.
But that didn't, to say that and then to equate it with the power behind the truth that we affirm. Whoa, that's that really makes it even more a picture of how powerful the truth. Because it's not us speaking the truth or affirming it; it's truth itself. And wow, that really helped.
Yeah. Yes.
This is Michael.
Michael, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, it reminded me that I was told that Mrs. Eddy commented that not handling reversal is almost like not praying at all. So always include it in your prayers. That's all.
Okay, thank you. And was that who else speaking?
No, I was going to say when we are uttering the truth and we know or we revere who it's coming from, it gives us a conviction for us to believe in it and therefore send it forth with power, with not our power, but the power that gave it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well said. Yes. We're going to talk today. We're going to talk today about a lot of things, but often I hear, you know, that I can read, I know the truth, but I can't connect it in my life. And it's very important that we be able to do this. And perhaps this is one of the first things to remember to do, because we can state the truth just like we've read it in our comfortable armchair. But do we know that it has this huge amount of power of God behind it? It is the truth itself being spoken. That's one of the first things to do in having a successful treatment. And then, yes, this idea of no reversal. That was one thing we always did with every watch. We would always put, and this is the power of truth and cannot be reversed. But again, it must be said with prayer and function and the power of God behind it. All right, who wanted to speak?
Oh, I was just going to say that I remember when I first came to Plainfield, and of course, I've never seen watches, prayers, and arguments before. And, you know, when he says, when you read the arguments of Mrs. Eddy, you can feel that she sent them out with such power. And it reminded me of when I had first started to read those watches, the power was so palpable. But it really, reading them and working with them really helped me, I guess, helped it click in my head, like, this is how you pray. It was kind of one of the first times that I really felt the power of the power of the word, as the hymn says.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. That's why the suppression of these books is so inexcusable in a way. And we talked about yesterday at the Bible study, you know, about Bicknell Young and how he'd written, and Tom sent me what was said about it, and how he'd written that he didn't want his papers out unless it was later by people and authorized people or something.
Yeah, either his students or the trustees of his whatever. I don't know if he had whatever he had.
Association,
yeah. But that was, you know, that was a long time ago.
If any of them are around, please stand up. But it was over 100 years ago. So I think now it's time, more than time, to get all of these things out. And they are revolutionizing the world. And again, these people who were taught by Mrs. Eddy, or taught by someone who was taught by Mrs. Eddy. So it's coming out of the horse's mouth, so to speak, the purity of it. And I liken it to Jesus's disciples. What if they didn't write things down? And they did write things down. And so was it not perfect? Maybe it wasn't perfect, but that doesn't mean that the thrust of it, that most of it was perfect, and that it continues to bless us this very day. Heaven forbid we were we don't have the Gospels, right?
Right.
So, this stuff is straining at gnats and swallowing camels, especially at this late date, and especially when materia medica has gotten so huge. And every time we declare a truth, when we get together at this roundtable, there's a mighty power that goes out. I always know it before, during, and after, to bless and spiritualize the world. Every time individually you state truths, a mighty power is going out. Every time we do a watch, certainly a mighty power is going out. And it doesn't take the masses. It takes just a few righteous people who have it in their heart. And great things can be done and are being done.
And for every church service, too, Mrs. Evans,
thank you.
Have us pray for that as well.
Yes, our church service, most definitely. And that's why we have the Tuesday nights and the Saturday night watches. Goes out with great power. The science and health and Bible being stated. It's powerful. Whether people are in attendance or not, still doing the work.
Yeah.
It's not up to us to hold back inspired good. I'm sure if Bicknell Young said that. It was just wisdom at the time.
I agree. It was wisdom at the time.
And his students knew his work, where others might not. So we don't know why he said it.
Yeah, we don't know why. We do, maybe some of the things were being copied down absolutely correctly or something like that. Yeah. But you know, they gave us a hard time. I say they, the organization, about the article Body by Mrs. Eddy, too. And now we say it's attributed to Mrs. Eddy, and maybe that's what we should do all the time, attributed. But again,
she wrote most of the things.
But that one's in the Library of Congress.
Well, that's what I thought too. That is what we, that's right.
Yeah. And he put it in there. I mean, she put it in the Library of Congress, so that's got to be the pure.
Well,
I don't know anyway.
Logic isn't going to win an argument with these people.
Right.
No. The reason I'm discussing it is all, every once in a while it comes up. It's usually people in the organization and they're quoting this and that. And I say, if you don't like it, please don't read it. You don't have to come to the website. If it's upsetting to you, don't bother with it. But many people are being healed by it. So to me, it's like the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Oh, don't heal on the Sabbath because that's just terrible. When in the meantime, people's lives are being
thousands
changed.
Thousands of people.
Yeah, thousands of people, actually. People will never know about.
And that's why we have to handle reversal.
Okay.
I mean, if there weren't the beliefs, erroneous beliefs, evil or even innocent erroneous beliefs, If they weren't around, we wouldn't have to pray. We wouldn't have to watch, because everything would be perfect in our human existence. But right now it's not. So we have to have, you can always tell a real true Christian Scientist because there's a line that you just can't cross with them. There's a steel border and you just don't cross it because if you try to cross it, it will rebuke your whatever error is trying to cross it. And that's how we all should be. We should have an iron border. Porter at the thought. it should be there, and it should always be handling resistance. It should always be trying the spirits. It should always be working 100% of the time to detect the attempt of erroneous beliefs to get into your consciousness. And it will work because truth is the only power. That's why it will work, and that's why it will heal. But if we don't apply it that way, well, you know, it's not going to work for you.
And we thank all these early workers. I know I would think they'd be very pleased that their work is getting out and that we handle it as best we can to make it accurate. We're not trying to plagiarize or do anything but to get the truth out. And we're very, very grateful. You hear it all the time. But we do know Mrs. Eddy's works are complete and are the source of anything else that's written that's of value. And it is all in Mrs. Eddy's works. So, all right, Jeremy, you want to read the golden text, please?
Isaiah. And he will destroy in this mountain the face of the covering cast over all people and the veil that is spread over all nations.
All right, the lesson does have a bit about veil. What is this veil?
Well, it's the belief in matter, that there's a material world, that we're mortal. That's one of the aspects of veil. And the denial of God's allness, presence, wrong thinking, any erroneous, ungodlike thinking definitely veils us. Seems to put a separation between us and the truth.
Thank you.
The belief of life in matter.
Thank you.
The belief that the truth is hidden or obscured and you won't know it.
Thank you.
And also part of it, the definition that we're given is hypnotism. That really hit me. Because, you know, it's like you've been tricked. You've fallen for something in this belief of matter.
Or the lie that there is another power or another presence.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Eddy's definition, a cover, concealment, hiding, hypocrisy. So, and yes, Christian Science comes to rent the veil and expose what seems to be hidden. I'll just share with you that Carrie sent three articles sort of giving a definition of veil and what it was. One, the first is The Unreality of Evil is the name of it, a journal article. And the manifestation of evil is only the working out of a belief and a false belief. But it is a fundamental law of thought that whatever is accepted as an unquestioned belief has to the human sense all the semblance and seeming of a reality until the belief is disproven. According to your faith in good, or according to your belief in matter and evil, will the measuring unto you always be determined. Between mortal sense and the radiant reality of the divine creation, there has interposed the belief in matter and evil. And this belief, with the results which it imposes, is what Isaiah calls the covering cast over all the people and the veil that is spread over all the nations. But this veil is done away in Christ. And then this one, called the Children of Israel. In Isaiah, we read that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and all nations shall flow into it. Also, that God will destroy the veil that is spread over all the nations. Surely this veil is an altogether distorted view of God's universe, resulting from wrong thinking, and it is what gives rise among men and nations to false beliefs regarding superiority of power, intelligence, pride of possession, and such like, when all the time God's love is impartial, bestowing loving gifts on all alike. A realization of this great truth will destroy such thoughts as greed, jealousy, dishonesty, and pride, and bring about a wonderful sense of true brotherhood. So Then we should rejoice in knowing that the love of God is everywhere and that it is His will that all should share it equally. As we reflect more love to our fellow man, the veil that seems to divide men and nations will be dissolved, and growing unity of thought, desire, and activity will finally result in perfect harmony. I love that one. That's a good one. Love is a liberator. All of these things, this is our theme of bringing in the millennium. This is what's going to do it, and our individual work on it will do it. And so instead of becoming so divided over so many things and then divided and then getting hateful, we have to go back to this, the truth of it. Love one another, word of revelation. Don't have to love error. No, we don't love error, but we must see the truth of what God has created. And then the final one, loose him and let him go, the name of the article. What is the face of the covering cast over the people and the veil that is spread over all nations? Is it not the belief of mortality? This is the veil that seemingly hides from us all the splendors of eternity and infinite good. The veil of the flesh that parts the seemingly seen from the seemingly unseen. When Christ had risen from the dead, demonstrated his understanding of the immortality of life in God, he walked with his disciples, and their eyes were holden. They did not know him, though their hearts burned within them. What was it that hid from their sight but the veil that is spread over all the nations, the veil of mortal belief? Could we, for a moment, rid ourselves of this veil, what wonders we should behold, and what joys we should know? This is Eddie Says, Science and Health. The great spiritual fact must be brought out that man is, not shall be, perfect and immortal. We must hold forever the consciousness of existence, and sooner or later, through Christ and Christian Science, we must master sin and death. The evidence of man's immortality will become more apparent as material beliefs are given up and the immortal facts of being are admitted. And so, end of quote. So, This is our work. This is what we do every time you declare a truth. Even at times when you think you don't believe it, you're putting that truth out there. But the more we can believe it and the more we can connect it in our daily living, the better it is for you and also for everyone. So any more comment about the veil?
Well, it's interesting that part of the definition of veil is hypocrisy, because that's really a state of thought. And it's the result of the belief in mortality, the belief that there is life, intelligence, substance, and matter, that gives rise to all of these wrong states of thought. Envy, right? You envy somebody else's better, quote, mortality. Jealousy, hatred, lust. You lust after, quote, better mortality, whatever that is. It gives rise to all of these states of thought that divide us. Mm. And only by getting rid of this wrong belief, and we get rid of these false states of thought that divide us, and recognize that the only true states of thought are those states of thought that reflect God, the love, which is why John preached, you know, love one another. But love is principled. It's not human. It's not mushy. It doesn't fall down into the depths of mortality and, you know, feel sorry and that sort of thing. No, it lifts people up. And it should lift up everyone who's around you. And that's why your life lived, you know, is going to be the best sermon, maybe the only sermon that most people ever hear or see. So we have to live the truth. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's so important.
All right. And what is it that lifts this veil is truth with a capital T. And we have it in the Bible and science and health, prose works, this truth. And if the more we know it, the more the veil is lifted. So, Shardell, I loved your article by Peter V. Ross.
The part, I think I'll start with what, because they were talking about prayer, and that we are the thoughtless manifestation thereof. And
First, the article is by Peter V. Ross, and it's called The Simplicity of Metaphysical Practice.
Yeah, and I looked at our website when I worked with Arise Shine, for thy light has come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. And that's what I found. And then I'll skip to this part. Prayer, says Emerson, the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest point of view. And then Tennyson says, more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. And Peter V. Ross says, prayer does not change God, because already and always is his active and unswervering good. Prayer changes him who prays. And this is the point where he begins to see the oneness with the eternal, and therefore his present possession of all things needful. And then he said, how do we do this? Dwell night and day in the fact that man is spiritual, immortal, and his life neither comes nor goes, that it knows nothing of age or disease, that he is in full possession of the glories and energies of the eternal. These truths, intelligently and expectantly held to, will actualize in better bodies, better intellects, and better careers.
It's wonderful. It's really what we talked about yesterday in the Bible study about our oneness, dwelling in the secret place of the Most High, and declaring always, no matter what the material senses seem to tell you, you declare the truth, and it does lift you. But I do love Peter V. Ross. He simplifies things, the simplicity of the metaphysical practice. Now, some of you, I hear you say, well, I've been doing that. Well, do it some more. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it. Keep putting unction in it. You know, those of us, most of these people from Plainfield, we've been here a long time doing this. If you think we started out in such good shape, we didn't. And we still have plenty of things to meet now. So we don't really think about that. I've been working with this for a week now. How come I don't see any results? Please.
Don't look to matter for results.
You're looking to matter. You're missing the whole point. It just shows you're missing the whole point of this whole thing. So.
Yes, and also, Mary, I often think those voices that tell us what you're just saying, that we don't hear the answer or we don't get results or we don't know how to apply it, those are not our own. Those are not our own voices. Those are, if it's not coming from God, it's not true. And so those are the things that we have to rise above. And before we can get the knowing, we have to see that, no, that, those are just floating around trying to attach themselves. That's just mortal mind. And right. If you don't let it attach itself to you and say, well, I know that can't be my thought because it's not godly. Of course, we're receptive to what God said. He is our own thought if we're listening. He's within us. We're within him.
Thank you. No, that's it. You're allowing all these negative thoughts come in and take a undo, maybe if it could, the work you've already done. Stand port at the door of thought. God didn't tell you you're not getting anywhere. God didn't tell you you're not making progress. God never said that. So who's talking?
See, those
impossible for God to say that. I mean,
it's
impossible for God to say such a thing. So it's not him.
You're right. Perfect now.
Right. So yeah. So those thoughts are the veil.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because they're covering the truth.
Exactly. They would like to distract you into a different direction so that you don't get the truth.
And instead, he wrote about the neophyte and also Max Dunaway, which helps so much because things that we do that are good, we don't give ourselves credit for, like the kindly task of a meeting need or wiping the tear from a child's eye or sitting by someone ill. But all those are, that's God working. And we need to take credit that he is using us and not feel that we're not accomplishing anything.
Thank you.
And Matt Connery says, and the gates of hell in their own weakness toppled and fell. Because individually, the people, his children have been doing as he directed. So
thank you. That's a beautiful poem by Max Dunaway. You don't have it here.
It's up here somewhere.
So, okay.
It's on the website.
Do you remember?
And it will be on the roundtable page.
Yeah, too. Yeah. It is a beautiful Max Dunaway, beautiful poetry. So thank you. Yes. Yeah. Would you just keep doing good and it'll topple away. We're taught here it's the great. The drop of water on the great rock, the rock will eventually crumble. But the idea is just persistence, stay with it, with joy. And know you are making progress because you are. How could you not be? And Mrs. Eddy has said, if you're striving, you're making progress. That's the thing. If you're not striving, if you're thinking all kinds of negative things and doing all kinds of things, well, then that's something else again. But you're working at it. You will make progress.
Mrs. Eddy also told someone that when she does have difficulties, she goes to the textbook and studies it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also tricky how those thoughts come as I'm sad, I'm lonely, I'm angry, I'm frustrated. And it's the I that can trick you into thinking it really is your thought, but it's not. And you just have to turn that around.
Yeah. The great I am. Mm-hmm. The only I there is. Chardell?
I believe it's Bliss that. And if you're, it is, for the 91st Psalm, if you're praying, you are working, even if it doesn't look like anything. But that prayer is real, and it does have an effect.
Thank you. The definition of truth in the 1828 dictionary is conformity to fact or reality, purity from falsehood, fidelity, constancy, honesty, virtue, sincerity, to practice what God commands of you. So, and this lesson, using the truth, the word is made flesh. It uncovers this veil. Then the healings come with Christ Jesus, the healing of the man with palsy and the man who was raised from the dead. And then in the lesson over and over about this truth, and we are adherents of truth. We're united as glue. So we're going to stick to that truth, like Peter V. Ross said, day and night, stick to it. And I've always loved this. I know I've given it too often, but the eternal truth destroys what mortals seem to have learned from error and man's real existence as a child of God comes to light. So keep with that eternal truth. Keep stating it. And all the things you seem to have learned from error will topple away. And your real existence as a child of God will come to light, because that's all there is. And how wonderful that is. And you can know this, not just for yourself, but for loved ones. You know, maybe you thought you didn't raise your children so well, or you wished, you know, that you knew more of the science. I hear that a lot, too. I would have done that. Well, that's all right. You're here now, and that eternal truth is operating, and anything that wasn't true will fade away, and you will see the man of God revealed in yourself and in your loved ones, untouched. Regretting the past, I mean, as I say, if it did any good, I'd say do it, but it doesn't. Lord, we've all made our mistakes. I know many times I wish, if I only knew more then, but I didn't. So I did the best I could, and that's all you can do, all you can ever do.
I mean, if all things work together for good, then yes. All of this is coming to something.
Thank
all
you.
The nonsense I went through came to a good end, so I'm sure it will for them.
Thank you.
No, that's such a good point. I mean, if I spent my time regretting all the things I did wrong, boy, I'd be miserable all the time.
But, at the time, you know, you probably wouldn't be receptive to it anyway. So,
that's right.
You know.
You right. would obviously you weren't. You weren't ready for it. You weren't receptive. Something.
But turn it around, and you can be grateful for the lesson learned.
Yeah.
And recognize that, okay, made a mistake, learned the lesson, move on, and be grateful that you're better for it. That's why it's important to admit mistakes. People who don't admit mistakes keep repeating them because they don't learn from them.
Yeah.
And I think Mrs. Eddy said, I was going to say it's about motive. So if you just know that you love God and you loved God all along, no matter what you knew, then that's the big point, I think.
Yeah. And many who have had, you know, very difficult childhood have said that they did love God and God was with them through those difficult times. And even if you didn't know God, even if all of that, it doesn't matter. God is always with you no matter what. He loves all his children. He doesn't say, well, you love me, so I love you. He just loves you all, whatever, always, unconditionally.
He's just love.
He's just love. And isn't that wonderful? Now, in the lesson, I think it refers so much to Martha Wilcox's chapter, The Word Made Flesh, in her association addresses. It's a very, very important chapter. All her book is just amazing. And she worked in Mrs. Eddy's home. She was directly taught by Mrs. Eddy. This is the truth of how to use the science, chapter after chapter. But this one, and I guess because I hear it, you know, how come I seem to know this truth, but I can't seem to demonstrate it? Well, she starts out with, Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, the era of the ages is preaching without practice, which means the statement of truth without its simultaneous visible or concrete expression accompanying it, seen in what we call practice, is the era of the ages. But then she does go on very kindly and lovingly to explain how to do this. I never noticed this before, but part of in section two of this chapter, The Word Was Made Flesh, it's called The How of the Way. I never talked to me before, but the how of the way. So yesterday even we were talking about the way, because Thomas asked, how do we know the way? And Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, right, and the life. So anyway, she goes on to say, the sight I now have is actual sight. The mind I now have is the only mind. The walking I now do is the only life consciously active. Of what value would the understanding be if it were not translated into human experience? But then she goes on, she talks about how important it is that you are born again, because being born again, changing your basis of living and belief from life in matter to no, you are not material, you are spiritual, scientific statement of being. You've got at least make some effort to understand that. So therefore, yes, I love that. The sight you have now is actual sight. And you only have the one mind. They're not two minds. There's just the one. And then she goes into fulfilling. This is fulfillment. You're not trying to get rid of a cold. You're not trying to get rid of bad eyesight. You're not trying to get rid of depression. You're fulfilling who and what you are. And you do that by knowing the truth, the eternal truth. You know it, you keep knowing it, and then the misconceptions, what happens to them?
Disappear.
They go. They can't stand around.
Thank you. They can't. And the louder era howls, what are you to do?
Be louder. Howl back.
Yes, until inarticulate sound is silenced forever. Mm-hmm. Don't let it boss you around.
And you voice the truth more loudly and strongly. The truth.
Yeah.
The truth.
The truth. And it's the truth that does the work. Mm-hmm. But you have to work it. We have to work it.
Carpenter had a great watch. I'll just mention this. It was talking about blowing leaves, and the leaves show up and you blow them away. And this, like, that's the process that we go through, right? Something comes to us, we handle it, we sweep it away, we find our peace, and then the next day the leaves are there again. And you thought, well, wait a minute, I thought I did the work. And he's like, well, wait a minute, it may look the same, but it's different. It's another, you have to handle this one. I'm not sure if I just conveyed that properly, but you don't get discouraged. You know, you just blow them away. You keep blowing. Eventually they will stop.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a wonderful watch. You think it's the same leaves. Oh no, not this again. It's not. It's a new crop of leaves, right? So,
repeating.
Yes. Yeah. The work is not humdrum, dear ones. It is repeating and defeating, repeating and defeating.
And the attempt is to discourage, which can't be done when you know that, when you know the truth. So it is a new set of.
Thank you.
And I love that Ms. Mitty asks us to argue until we get to the point of knowing. Because once I get to the point of arguing, the point that I'm certain, you know, there's no moving. I mean, I feel good, and whatever happens, you know, I know it's just a fog. But to argue, you know, it's impossible for the other thing, once you finish arguing, to even be a possibility. So,
and then she says, and eventually you won't have to argue anymore. You'll just be so in it. You'll be so. In it. And isn't that those three stages she talks about? First the mortal mind, then the ascending, mm-hmm. and finally you. And we all have had glimpses of just being so there that you don't have to argue. You just know. You know so firmly.
The 3 degrees also.
Yes. Thank you. The degrees. Martha Wilcox goes on, at no time did Jesus base his practice on the belief that he was a human being advancing toward the Christ. And at no time did he believe that he would sometime become the Christ. No, he was the Christ. And Christ must be in evidence as concrete being expression. So he knew it. And then the kingdom is come in earth as it is in heaven. And the middle wall of partition is broken down. It has been broken down ever since that day of days when the veil of the temple was rent and man was free to enter the Holy of Holies. So I just love to think about that. You're free to enter the Holy of Holies. And then once you go, stay there, please. Don't come out. Don't listen to all these suggestions. And it tempts you in so many ways. At first, it seems very logical to get upset over the political situation or something else. And then you get out and you start chewing around on it and getting upset. And then pretty soon you're not feeling well. And then whatever, you know how it goes. So keep in that Holy of Holies. Abide with God in the consciousness of God, as the Peter V. Ross art. Day and night, dwell there, declaring the truth. But that doesn't mean you're not in this world. You definitely are, but you're just not going to be
of the world.
Of the world, yes. So in that second section, the word was made flesh, the way, the how of the way. That's where she's talking about Jesus saying, I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And it's essential that we fulfill. That's a wrong concept of Christian Science to think that we're destroying things, or this thought, well, I don't have a body. Of course you have a body. I used to think that. I used to think I'm trying to get rid of this awful body. Well, that's awful to think that. And it was very
it's your view of it, right?
It's yes.
Yeah.
You're trying to bring out the true sense of body, which is spiritual and perfect and beautiful and healthy and everything. So, and in doing that, this false sense falls away, just naturally falls away. So,
and the concrete evidence will be evident.
Yeah. And many of you have had these experiences where you have seen it and seen it instantaneously or right away. And remember those. Write those down in your journal so you don't forget. And the little ways you see it all day long. It doesn't have to be some huge, you know, you think unless it's some huge, big healing, whatever that is. Healings go on all the time. Every time you stand for right. Every time you declare the truth. So,
I think it's in retrospect and introspect in this study, talks about how God grinds exceedingly small.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he grinds to a powder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was going to send you, Mary, the article Parthens wrote about the numeration table, which is in the lesson this week. But it talks about what you just mentioned about being grateful for the little things and the big things. But we have to know what the source is, even of the littlest things. And sometimes when we're in our day and we wonder, you know, it's just things are crowding in and everything. The smallest little thing that happens, that I can find something that I've been looking for, or I can mention it. And then all of a sudden, something just small just happens in my day. But it's, to me, it's huge, because I suddenly feel God's presence. And he's been here. He really has been here the whole time, because look what just happened. And I just didn't ever do that or realize it until coming here, that these little things, and Parthens talks about it in his article, Enumeration Table, how important it is to acknowledge the smallest little as well as the biggest. But sometimes we miss the little things, details in our life that are just as much God's presence telling us, I'm here.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
God, every time.
Yeah, every time.
Every big, little, whatever.
That sure changed your life. And do send me that article. I know Parthen's article.
Yeah, wonderful. I will send it to you.
Yeah. So, and applicable to anything. So,
and,
yeah.
And isn't this the evidence of our oneness with God?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because the false belief is that, you know, we're separate from God and he's up there in the sky somewhere, and maybe occasionally comes down to visit. But no.
Awesome.
Thank you. And so the third section of this article is the word made flesh allusion. And, you know, she goes into it so well. How often, you know, you think you see a snake and it's actually just a stick. So what's wrong there? And she says how we persist. She said even after all of this, people will still say that they're in the mortal mind, or, you know, they argue for the wrong side. But so is seeing the snake, which it isn't there. I mean, what is that? You're seeing something that's not there. So it's not there. It's not there physically. But also you think it's there in your head, right? You think you see it. You might be scared to death. You might pass out. But it's not real. And that's the point of an illusion. It's not real, but you think it is. And a delusion is when you argue that it is real, even contrary to fact. Maybe you'll go over there and see it's a stick, but you still argue it's a snake. That's delusionary.
Since it's not there, if you try to work directly against it, you're not going to, it's not going to do anything.
Yes.
Mm-mm. Well, and so, once you realize too that the five senses can be fooled, I mean, you know, we talk about the power of reason. I mean, but you have to think about, you know, if you put a stick down in the water and you look at it, doesn't it look like the stick breaks and kind of shifts to the side? It's an optical illusion. You know, when you see a plane miles away, you can cover it with your pinky, but you know it's bigger than that.
Right. No, that's an example. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she says this. She says, you know, images are reflected in the reverse on the retina, but you have to flip it around. So, and then she says, this is what Christian Science does. Science reverses the evidence before the senses.
Yes, thank you. Yep, it's all correct. Martha Wilcox says, in Christian Science treatment, we do not remove sickness, suffering, weakness, or death from the body. Neither do we remove these from the mind, as though they were in and of the mind. But rather, do we look upon them as a shadow cast over the mind, and we put on more light, more understanding. And then, how many of you are spending much time in inharmony because you have objectified your misconceptions of man as a husband or wife or somebody and given this illusion life? Daniel was sufficiently illumined by truth that the lions were harmless and peaceful. They always had been and always will be the eternal manifestation of spirit. The lions were not to be destroyed. A lion will always remain a lion to lie down with the lamb, but our misconception, objectified as lion, will change as our false belief is reconciled with the truth of man's creation. And then she tells how Mrs. Eddy, how they were instructed to heal one of her, Mrs. Eddy's horses that was sick. It's beautiful. The whole chapter, it's a deep chapter, but it's one worth studying to bring the truth into concrete, visible form, and it takes some work. Not always, but usually. It's not handed to you on a platter, but it's certainly worth working for. So now we are going to end on John Morgan's little pamphlet, Some Notes on True Vision, and what he has to say about truth.
He writes, truth. How am I seeing? Who am I seeing? What am I seeing? In truth, I see only God's image and likeness, for man is a transparency for truth. My vision proceeds from my love of truth, from my conscious awareness of the idea, and therefore I see man to be the Son of God, or God expressed. Man includes the truth about everything. So I recognize both great and small to have divine significance. My focus is on infinite range, is of infinite range. my seeing, being spiritual, always has reference to truth and is attentive to what is true and divine. It is not dissipated in idle curiosity, but is steadfast on all that is of true worth. I see that there is only one man, and therefore I recognize that one man's good is all men's good. I am quick to see my brother's need and to supply it, mentally and spiritually, in order that my vision of man be whole and healthy. I see man unfallen, upright, godlike. I love to practice seeing the truth, for true vision blesses both the seer and the seen. I judge or criticize no man, but allow truth to deal with error in God's own way. In truth, my manhood comprises both man and woman in perfect balance. My manhood seeing is manifested in good far vision, seeing the abstract and impersonal truth clearly and steadily. My womanhood vision is manifested in good near sight, for I can bring home the wider truths and see them in their details as applying to me practically and comfortingly. My manhood sees with the intellect, my womanhood with the feeling. These two viewpoints, eyes, combine as one, for apprehension and comprehension are wedded in me. In the Gospels, every case of healing of the blind is accompanied by a reference to "Thou Son of David." David typified the wedding of manhood and womanhood, the outward seeing and the inner conception. It is this spiritual activity of wedding the human and the divine, which is the key of David, that opens our vision. In truth, I am son or derived. Therefore, it is my heritage to enjoy God's vision. No mortal inheritance ever gave it me or could deprive me of it.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.